Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. For anybody that happens to be visiting, I'm not a normal speaker here, and things will be back to normal shortly thereafter with Ryan and Alan taking up where they usually left off. I'm going to begin tonight talking to you about building the church. And I'm going to begin with a fake announcement. So this is not real. But you've probably noticed that we have more cameras around here than usual. We've been upgrading our technology. We've been working on automating the Lord's work. So Brian has got a facial recognition software that is able to spot us as we walk in, so we no longer have to worry about the pegboard. And the computer actually will send out cards to people who are not here and see how they're doing. So we don't have to worry about group meetings anymore either. Is that going to work? That is not going to work. And think about why it's not going to work. I mean, how would you feel if you received a card like that? What's that going to mean to you? Or if that's a little bit too sci-fi for you, let's say we hire a secretary whose job it is to check out people like that. And we hire someone whose job it is to visit. And they visit all the people who are sick for us. And we hire someone whose job it is to teach people who want to learn about the gospel. We hire them to take care of that as well. And we no longer have to worry about any of those things. Is that going to function? Is that the way our body is meant to function? No, it's not. If you turn to Ephesians chapter 4, or I'm going to put it up here on the board, verses 11 through 16, it tells us a little bit about God's plan. And he gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God. And skipping a little bit further on, it says, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. So who is supposed to do the work? Who is supposed to do the ministry and the serving and the building up? Well, I'm going to cut straight to the chase. It's the elders' job, the teachers' and preachers' jobs to give us the tools. We need to be equipped to do that work. And then to point us to the work. And we need to be out there working. That's the plan. The body builds itself. That puts us in the position of having a great mission. We have to minister. We have to serve. We have to work. It's our job to make the church grow, and we have to build it ourselves. That's a lot of work for us to do, a great mission. Before Jesus was born, the Jews also had a lot of building to do during the time of Nehemiah. They had to build a wall. Now, Ken usually used to do this lesson every year here, and I'm going to try to put it into one lesson. If you would like to, that's going to make it thin. If you'd like to have a better treatment of this, Ken's lesson, his last one he preached in 2012, is available on our website. You can download it and listen to it, and it's a great listen. It's very encouraging, as I hope this will be for, it is for me, and hopefully it will be for you. I wanted to hear it again, so I thought I would give it a try. Now I'm going to give you a little history lesson to put you back in this time. In 687 BC, Babylon utterly destroyed Jerusalem. They take the most able Jews into captivity under Nebuchadnezzar, and they take them away to Babylon. And what they leave left in Jerusalem is an utterly destroyed city. Not one stone is upon another in the wall, and the gates are burned. Later on, they get conquered by the Persians, and King Cyrus has a very different strategy than taking people away from their land. He allows them to go back to their land if they want to. And in 536 BC, Zerubbabel leads a group of willing Jews back to Jerusalem, and they, first things first, build the temple. It takes them 20 years to build the temple, But that's the center of their worship to God and the center of their city. And so they build it first, which is good. But they don't get around to the things that aren't quite as important, like the walls. So it takes a long time until later on, 425 BC, Nehemiah comes back to build the walls and to hang the gates. And he had a tough job. This is not like putting up your backyard fence. This is a picture of the Western Wall. I don't have as good pictures as Ken does either. Sorry about that. But you can see those stones are bigger than people, some of them. And they didn't have forklifts at the time. They didn't have heavy equipment or ability to move things like we do. And that would be a challenge for us to build. The length of wall that they had to build was to encompass the entire city. And to, I forget what the height is, but to a significant height. It was an astronomical task. But in order to get this done, Nehemiah followed his plan. Well, I'm going to apply that plan to building the church because we are living stones, built up a temple to God. Elsewhere, the New Testament uses that example. If we apply this plan, this is a successful plan for building a wall in Jerusalem. This was a successful plan for the First National Bank. This was a successful plan here in this congregation for several years to help us grow by focusing on external people who wanted to learn about the gospel. This plan also works if we focus internally. It will work if we follow this according to the New Testament revealed to us. So this is a 15-step plan, and I'm going to move through it rather rapidly, but step number one, Nehemiah cared. In Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, it says, "The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, now it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year, as I was in Susa the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem." Now he asked his brother specifically about that. You don't do that if you don't care. It's not casual conversation. See, "And they said to me, 'The remnant there in the province who had survived the exile and is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are destroyed by fire.' As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven." This cut him to his heart. He cared emotionally. And as we'll see in Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, that's very different than Nehemiah's normal character. In the month, in chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, "In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence." He was such an upbeat and positive employee that he always saw the positive in things. He was the kind of person who never showed sadness or sorrow, was always able to turn things around. And at this point, for the first time, he shows the king that he's sad. And the king notices. "And the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, seeing you're not sick? This is nothing but sadness of the heart.' And then I was very much afraid." Nehemiah cared about that. And if we're going to grow here at Monte Vista, we need to care. The church here will not grow unless we do. Oops, not that yet. So, the congregation here, the people here, the Chad Wagners, the Mike Abneys, the David Cravenses, and even the Beverly Cravenses, and, oh, Sparks, sorry, I just had your name. You know, the people, the Lisa Borens, the women have a role to play as well, and even the younger ones of our group, the Jacob Borens, the Caitlin Monicos. We need to care. If we don't care about growth at the Monte Vista congregation, it just won't work. We will not grow. God cares about growth here, as we already saw in the passage that we just read. He cares about our growing, but he wants us to care about it too. We need to have
a concern that makes it important in our lives. And we just won't grow if we don't care. We must plan for growth in order to have it happen. In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 12 and onward, I'm only going to read a section of that, but Nehemiah went to Jerusalem, and he arose in the night. And then I arose in the night, and a few men with me, and I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate, and I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Other translations say viewed. He inspected the situation. He went to several different places and he looked at the situation. He needed to see what things were like before he began his task. We need to plan for growth, and our plan must fit the situation. Because if we don't have tailored plans to the way, these plans are not one size fits all. They need to be adapted to the way our group is, the situation that we're in. Because growth won't happen automatically. It won't happen just because we want it to happen. We need to set, these sort of things only work when we set goals, we work towards them, and we measure whether or not we're moving in the right direction. Well, our leaders have already done this. They've spent the time looking at our situation, and they have announced to us just recently what our goals are, what our marching orders are for this year. And they have considered these things in this light. And we need to be ready to follow that. Our leaders need to be people of prayer. At least four times in Nehemiah chapters 1 through 6, the leaders of the people are in prayer to God about their situation. Our leaders need to pray for wisdom, because wisdom comes from only one true source that we know about in James. It comes from God. Our leaders need to pray for strength to face the challenges that are going to be in front of them this year. But guess what? It's not only our leaders that need to do that. We need to be praying for those things, because we're going to be facing those challenges as well. Without prayer, we won't be headed in the right direction. We won't be equipped properly for the things that we need to face. Abby's been telling me there's a show, I don't know if any of you watch it, it's called 19 and Counting, about a family that has a ton of kids. And she tells me, you know, every time they turn around, they're praying. They have a decision to make. They have something to think about. They have to weigh the difference between a few things. They're always saying, we should pray about this. Are they teaching their kids better than we're teaching our kids? Are they teaching my kid better than I'm teaching my kid? We should be teaching prayer as a central part of our lives. We must be a people that encourage each other. In Nehemiah chapter 2, chapter 4, and chapter 5, Nehemiah encourages them in several ways. First, he encourages them to build, which they had left the ground fallow for many years. He said, we need to build. He encouraged them by reminding them that God was on their side. And he rebuked them when they were abusing each other. He was constantly guiding and goading them along to help them work. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, it says, consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. People are pretty good usually at provoking each other, but not so many people are good at considering to provoke to good works. We need to be the kind of people who are good at that. Be looking around to help push us in the positive direction. When it comes to our groups, have you ever felt funny trying to write a card to a person to encourage them through a difficult time, or to ask them, to tell them you've been missing them, or making a call to a person? Have you ever thought you don't know exactly what to say or what situation they're in? Well, sometimes you need to earn the right to encourage. We can't use the groups and that information as a shortcut to false intimacy.
I wouldn't feel comfortable writing a card to someone saying, you know, I really hope you're doing well with your spiritual struggle that you've been going through, if I had never even talked to the person. If I had found out about it in a group meeting and we talked about it, and then I sent that very personal card to that person. We need to be talking to people, making the relationships that allow us to be able to encourage each other. That's something we need to do as part of our time together. That makes our encouragement work. Because the short kind sounds an awful lot like the computer version. If we don't know each other or what's really going on or have that kind of relationship, our cards may sound as hollow as that. We must not allow criticism to stop us. It's number 5. In Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 19 through 20, it says, "When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and they despised us and said, 'What is this thing that you've been doing? Are you rebelling against the king?' Then I replied to them, 'The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we his servants will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem.'" And later on in chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, he says, "Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and of the army of Samaria, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?' Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, 'Yes, what they're building, if a fox goes up on it, he'll break it down. He'll break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them to be plundered in a land where they are captives.'" We are going to face criticism as we go forward this year to do our task. We're going to face criticism from without, and that's not unusual. That probably won't affect us very much because a lot of people think Christians don't make sense in the way that they approach things. We tend to dismiss them pretty well. But we will also have criticism from within, and that will hurt us much more. There will be those who, because of preconceived notions or just plain laziness, will not work or will criticize us. And that will affect our growth. Ken used an example of a boat. You can put a whole lot of water outside of a little boat and you won't sink it. It'll float just fine. But you can put a little water in a boat and it will sink. That can be the case here in our congregation. So we need to be aware of that. We need to be ready. In chapter 4, verses 10 through 12 of Nehemiah, the Jews themselves criticized themselves. And we pray that if you're one to criticize, rather than participate, that ultimately your efforts will be unsuccessful and that we will be able to move past this. We need to be ready for this and not consider it to be anything special, but move forward. In Nehemiah chapter 3, we see a list of all the families that are assigned tasks. Every family has a task. We will use every member here. There's nobody that doesn't have a responsibility. Everyone has a job. We have a great task to do here, and everyone needs to be a part of it. No one can sit out. The elders not only expect that these things will be done, but they inspect that they will be done. That makes things get done better. If they are inspected as well as expected, then action happens in a more successful way. When everybody is building, there are few left to tear down. Along the lines of this, there are a lot of jobs to be done and a lot of workers, but it's hard to line up what people want to do and are capable and able to do with the work that needs to be done. A similar situation to this just happened with the Phoenix Suns. Normally, I don't make sports analogies, but I know this one. So there were a couple of Suns players who wanted to play different positions than what was available, who didn't want to play within the Suns systems. Well, they're not on the team anymore. They got kicked off. Even though we had 3 guards, there weren't enough point guard positions. We need to be team players. Not everybody here can be a song leader. Not everybody here can lead singing all at once. Not everyone here can teach a class. But there is work that everyone here needs to do, and we need to remember that this work is not about us. This is not about me. This is about the work that God needs to have done, and we need to be the kind of team players who will do what needs to be done in order to complete that mission. Number 7, we will not quit when others quit. In Nehemiah chapter 3, verses 5 and then verse 27, says, "And next to them the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles would not stoop to serve their Lord." That's a group of people who were so high on themselves, thought they were the big shots, they didn't want to do the work. They didn't put their necks to the work at all. What will be done in that situation? The problem with that situation is when you are working with some people and somebody says, "I don't want to do that," it's human nature to say, "You know what? I'm not going to do that either." And if you get a whole group of people together who have that same mentality, you get the domino effect. When one person says no, it chains all the way through. And what happens? The work does not get finished. We can't be that kind of people. We will not be domino effect people. We need to stop that. What happened, that work would not get finished at all, but what happened here is not only the Tekoites who were working, not only did they do their own work, but they did the work of they did extra work, work that the people who wouldn't work would do. In verse 27, "After him, the Tekoites repaired another section opposite the great projecting tower as far as the wall of Ophel." We have to expect this to be the case. This is not fair. It's not fair when somebody doesn't want to do work, or we feel like they're capable of doing it and ought to do it, but they don't do it. It does make us not want to do it. But it is going to happen here, and we can't take that attitude, or it's just not going to get done. We have to expect that we're going to have to do our work and the work of others. It's not fair, but it's necessary, or else we will not complete our work. We will not go looking for a fight. In Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 7 through 8 and 16 through 18, people came to start a fight, to pick a fight, Sanballat and Tobiah, to pick a fight with Nehemiah, and he said, "We're busy here working. We need to keep our focus. There will be plenty of opportunities to fight from outside and from within because our opponent is Satan, and he does not give up. He will always be present. There will always be opportunities for fighting." We can't give in to that. We can't go looking for a fight. There are battles that need to be fought, and we need to face those and fight them while we work. Nehemiah had trowels and sword in one hand and bricklaying in the other hand. We need to keep our focus moving forward. And when we have issues, we'll need to deal directly with them with love, not with a callous and harsh attitude. Now, in number 9 is we must remember that God fights for us. In chapter 4, verse 20, and also in chapter 2 at the beginning, he says, "In the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight with us." You know, there are too many people that feel like we're only going to be able to get done. We're in this by ourselves. We're only going to be able to get done what human beings can get done. We need to learn to walk by faith because God is fighting for us. We can do more than we imagined. In fact, in Philippians, it tells us that we can do all things through Jesus Christ that strengthens us. We're not going to limit ourselves to what we think we're capable of because God can work a greater thing in us than even we know. There are people here who have grown more than they ever imagined by focusing their faith on the Savior. Number 10, we'll recognize that this takes hard work. In Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 21, he says, "So we labored at the work, and half of them held the spears from the break of dawn until the stars came out." Some people say, boy, you sure are lucky to have a congregation that keeps on growing, that is growing spiritually and maturing in that way. But it's not luck. It just costs more than most people are willing to pay. And we need to know that going into it. Jesus said in John chapter 9 and verse 14, I must work the works of him that sent me. And we say, if it's good enough for the master, it's good enough for us. We're here to work. We will work. If you're the kind of person who isn't willing to do that or doesn't have a mind for work like that, this may not be the place for you to worship or work. Consider that. Whoops. When you think about it, about the amount of work we have ahead of us, it starts to look like a part-time job on top of our regular careers. And that's the realization I came to when I first heard this lesson, when I was moving into town, that this is too much work. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do this. And that revealed to me that my mind was not set right, because this is the full-time job. I try to fit the rest of my life in around God's work, and if I'm finding that my life is being crowded out, I don't have enough time to do the Lord's work, it makes me think of Martha and Mary. You remember, there were so many things to be concerned about, but really only one thing mattered, and Mary had chosen the better. If we don't have time to do the Lord's work, what are we doing? We will not get careless. They focused. I'm going to have to move a little faster now, a lot faster. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 23, they didn't even take off their clothes. They kept their weapon in their right hand while they were working. We will not get careless. We need to be a people ready for action. If we're satisfied with the status quo, we are not going to grow as a congregation. God's army advances, doesn't retreat. If we aren't advancing, if we aren't moving forward, then we're losing. We'll solve internal problems as they arise. Nehemiah had a serious issue in chapter 5 and spent the time to focus on it and resolve it and cause the people who were lending money at bad rates to forgive those debts. Problems are not unusual. They're going to happen in our group. They're not always harmful, only if they stop us from moving forward. We need to not ignore them, to address them, but at the same time, not lose our focus. In Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 8, he asked them a difficult question. He says, are you going to sell your own brothers? Are you willing to sell your brothers? We need to love each other above all else, because love is our mark. Jesus told us that. That's how the world will know us, by how we love each other. Well, I'm going to have to skip to the end, unfortunately. I'm not going to be able to finish all the details. But the question is, can we succeed at this task if we have all the steps? The wall looked a lot worse than this when he started work. But in Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 15, like, you just take a minute to remember, these walls had been lying there for hundreds of years, and even for 60, 80 years, while Jews were present. The wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. It took him 52 days to finish it with concerted effort. That is astounding. That's not something that we could even do today with heavy equipment. So the question is, in Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 16, the next verse, he says, and when all of our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly on their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. That work was so dazzling to the people around them that they could see that God was at work, and it had an impact in the world. We can have an impact like that. If we are faithful to the plan, if we sit at Jesus' feet as a servant, if we put God at the top of our priorities, people will see him at work here at the church in Monte Vista. So are you up to it? Like Ryan talked about this morning, Are you adequate to the task? Are we up to it? I think we are. With God's help, we're able to do this. But pray about it. And pray for strength and wisdom and the ability to keep this fresh in your mind. Because here at the beginning of the year, a lot of times these things stay fresh. But we're going to need to keep it fresh throughout the year so that we can push all the way through and finish this great work that we're working on. If you're not a Christian and you're ready to become one, Jesus died so that you could be saved. We didn't get to talk about that very much tonight, but he invites you today to come and be saved. If you're ready to do that, you can do that now while we stand and sing.